Ever feel like planning a trip is almost as fun as taking it? Hotel comparisons, restaurant reservations, a perfectly timed itinerary. What if your love of planning travel could actually become a source of income? As a Fora advisor, it can. Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan travel and help others travel well. With best-in-class training, powerful booking tech, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider knowledge, you can confidently build your own travel business on your terms, from anywhere. Every hotel, cruise, and experience you book earns you commission. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred travel partners from iconic brands to boutique gems, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout. The kind of elevated travel experiences most travelers never get. Now's the time to turn your passion for travel into a fulfilling business with Fora. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/advisor. That's foratravel.com/advisor.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the All-22 NFL Show. It's the official channel of the All-22 Fantasy Football Platform. It's the only fantasy football game with full 53-man rosters, including offensive linemen, where you get to choose personnel packages and have access to PFF grading and advanced stats to make decisions each week. To learn more and sign up, go to all-22.com. Ray, hope you're doing well. This is week 17. It's the last week of the regular season. We should be finding out a lot of really important information soon. One, how many people are going to be like on mental health watches because their team just doesn't make the playoffs. They have nothing to watch and live for. How many people out there are going to be loving the draft community time that we're going to have together when we start reviewing prospects? But a lot of really fun things, and honestly, a lot of things for everyone. I was making jokes. Mental health is not a joke. I'm sorry. But Ray, in that vein, how are you?
Oh, yes, audience, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you for asking. I'm doing very well. So, yes, hold your applause. Yeah, doing great. Doing great.
Cool, dude. Well, we have a pretty awesome episode that is about the end of the year, right? It's time where we can start looking back and saying, who is the best, right? And for those of you that are new to this platform, right? I said in the intro, this is about All-22 Fantasy Football, where we use PFF grading in our analysis of our prospects. And I think it's time, Ray, that we make an All-22 team of the year. Okay, we have the information, the data's in. It's time to make this All-22 team. And if you don't mind, I'll lead it off with quarterback, okay? So the All-22 NFL Quarterback of the Year nominations are these two players: Matthew Stafford or Drake May. And you have to make the decision, and I will help you with some data here. So for Matthew Stafford, 129.1 fantasy points in All-22, which was good for first in the entire platform. Drake May was second with 123.7. Very, very close. 93.1 passing grade for Matt Stafford, 86.7 passing grade for Drake May. Matthew Stafford had how many? 46 big-time throws. Matthew Stafford had 46 big-time throws this year, okay? Drake May, 27. 17 turnover-worthy plays for Matthew Stafford, 14 for Drake May. 9.4 ADOT for May, 9.6 for Matthew Stafford. That's a little bit about the numbers, but I think the important thing too, right, you can look at just the data, but there's the other side of it, right? Where Matthew Stafford has led this team to an 11-5 record, but that's third in their own division, right? So how much weight do we put into that winning record? I also think, right, Puka Nacua has had an amazing year. Devontae Adams has had an amazing year. Sean McVay being the coach makes the situation a lot easier for everybody on that offense. We're on the Drake May side. 13-3 record is good for first in the entire NFL, right? Tied with the Broncos. Not really sure who has the tiebreaker there for the one seed in the AFC, but we'll find it out probably this week. And in the last 3 weeks, really good games. He lost a heater against the Bills, but beat both the Ravens and the Jets and beat the Jets pretty badly, right? We've talked about their situation there in New England before. I think Vrabel has come in and done a great job helping that team take the next step, making the offensive line half, you know, viable. Stephon Diggs has looked good, but it really is still a bit of a ragtag group of playmakers. So with that information, where are you leaning for the quarterback of the year?
It's a ragtag group of playmakers. They've had their best season in years, ages at this point. I'm
Don't
so
say
happy
ages
for them.
Like they weren't just a dynasty for 20 years, okay? Don't say ages. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's been a while. It's been a while. Okay, they've been conditioned for success that they have not had in a while. But they also didn't have to go through the NFC, or excuse me, the NFC West.
NFC West.
They didn't have to go through that. Okay, the AFC East is a lot different. So with that said, it still has to be Stafford. His big time throw rate is ridiculous. At his age, to be doing what he's doing is crazy. And yeah, I mean, they're still in the playoffs, still won 11 games so far. So, you know, yeah, it's still Matthew Stafford. And this isn't a career achievement award either. We'll see what happens with the MVP NFL vote, which probably is leaning a little bit more towards the team accomplishment side, with the Patriots having 13 wins and Drake May kind of being the hot name right now as it relates to the odds-on favorite. But Stafford's just big-time throws, his metrics are phenomenal, and he's had a bit of a tougher road, despite arguably having, it's not even arguable, the better supporting cast around him. He still had a bit of a tougher road there, and so given the totality of it all, it's got to be Matthew Stafford. But obviously, you're incredibly excited if you have Drake May in all 22, or if you're a Patriots fan who has Drake May on your favorite team. You're not trading him for Matthew Stafford because there's so much good football ahead of him, and you're extremely excited for the future. So be excited for May, but the winner is Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I would lean to. It's your pick, obviously. We're going to have a really fun wide receiver conversation in a few minutes, but the season that Puka Nacua had is insane. So we'll get there, but why don't you start on running back?
All right, running backs, they matter, I think, maybe. So I got a couple names for you. I'm going to go through just sort of one by one here. The first one probably is not a surprise to the average person, but he's not necessarily first in all 22 at this point. But Bijan Robinson, phenomenal player. 34.9 points scored in all 22 this season, which is good for fourth most among all running backs. His 83.9 run grade is actually seventh among qualifying running backs, but his receiving grade of 88.9 is fourth. He's had 272 attempts overall, which is sixth most among running backs. 4.05 yards after contact per attempt is good for second highest. 1.99 yards per route run is first among running backs. So even if he's not the most highly utilized running back in the passing game, when he is used in the passing game, he's better than everybody. He has the most forced tackles missed, missed tackles forced among all right, tongue twister there. I'm just going to start over on that one. 84 missed tackles forced, which is first among all running backs. The next highest is 65. Okay. 65. The gap between Bijan Robinson and the second highest running back when it comes to forcing missed tackles is the same as the gap between second and 13th. Just to give you an idea of how big of a tier difference it is when it comes to forcing missed tackles at running back, Bijan Robinson does it better than anybody else in the league by far. So pretty darn good player. I don't think any of that's really a surprise. Top six in everything, and then obviously in some categories runs away with it. So good on you, Bijan. But the surprise name to most folks, I think, is Devon Achane, who actually finished first in all 22 points among running backs this season with 36.3. He had the highest overall grade among running backs at 89.2, the highest run grade overall at 91 even. His 5.7 yards per attempt were first in the NFL among qualifying running backs. And the gap between him and second, which is 5.3, is as large as the gap between second and eighth. So another big tier drop there that you see in Achane's own right. 4.11 yards after contact per attempt is first among running backs, and he had 40 runs of 10 plus yards in the league, which is first in the NFL. So these are two, obviously there's one like household name, and there's another name that everybody knows but probably doesn't think of in this category, but they all have like, or they each have their kind of runaway categories here where they're the best by far in the league among what they do well. So where do you go with this? I think you're a little biased, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I am a little biased, right? I'll admit it. I like Devon Achane. I do. I think that his offense is so tailor-made for his style of play that it makes it very easy. And I think another part of it is when he's not there, you see a guy like Jalen Wright step in and have an amazing game, right? Or you see guys like Mostert step in and play really high levels of football. So while I don't want to take anything away from A-Chain and what he's been able to achieve, I do think that there's a lot of optimistic play that can come out of that offense that I don't know if I could just purely credit to him. Where I think Bijan, you've already mentioned it, the way that he creates, the way that he makes people miss tackles, it is different, right? It's another level. You know what's funny though, dude? Because like, as much as I'm excited about these new names in this conversation, it's still concerning to me that so much of the running back conversation is about Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley. Like, I'm still waiting for this next group of running backs to take the reins. Like, I know you're nominating two guys as the new names. I'm not sure they really are at the level of McCaffrey, Kamara, Henry, Saquon, when those guys were in their prime of primes, right? Like, that was a different level. I want to see Bijan, A-Chain, Gibbs, Genty. I want to see those guys get to that level. I'm not sure they're there yet. And saying that, I do think that there's this kind of upcoming trend with running backs where they are going to become more important. I'm excited for that. I'm going to give it to Bijan, right? You nominated two guys. I have two choices. I think Bijan's the guy because he creates for himself more than A-Chain does. But I am excited for the next couple of years of the running back class and a few guys in this draft too that we're definitely going to get to.
I actually want to touch on one point you said too, which is I think extremely relevant when it comes to looking at these guys versus like the primes of Saquon and McCaffrey and Derrick Henry. A name that a lot of people obviously think of when it comes to top in the league as well, Jahmyr Gibbs was the second highest scoring back in all 22 this year, right? But I think you've seen, or especially during the playoffs, if you had him on your team during the playoffs, grades of 63.9, 56.4, 53.1. None of that surprising because over the last 3 weeks, he's kind of faltered a little bit. And someone like Kyren Williams, who was also up there top two in all 22 or top three in all 22 this season, was extremely consistent each week, but only has 1 week this entire season above an 80. So he's not a game breaker. Those guys that you mentioned were game breakers and like consistent game breakers week in and week out. This group of running backs is like, you know, outside of like the very top, like you have flickers of that, but it's not quite there yet. The light isn't, or the flame isn't fully burning just quite yet. And we are still kind of waiting for that to really shine through.
That's exactly my point. I think Bijan and Gibbs have the ability. They've shown the ability, but for some reason, right, they haven't done it yet. I think it'll be interesting next year because Tyler Algier is a free agent. So they're not going to be able to spell Bijan with this great complementary piece the way they have. So will we see Bijan become the full-rounded running back that we want to see so that he can get to that level? I think Gibbs, kind of same conversation. How much has he relied on David Montgomery to do some of his dirty work, right? Saquon, McCaffrey, Henry, they never had that. They never had to rely on another guy. So I want to see those guys take the next step next year, and I think we might get that chance, which is cool. Let's go to receiver, and I'm going to lead the conversation here. So the all 22 receiver nominations of the year are two guys. And this is a great conversation, so I'm excited for it. But Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think they're both obvious. So it's Jaxon Smith-Njigba and it's Puka Nacua are the two people I'm nominating. But when we really break it down, it gets way more interesting here, okay? So Jaxon Smith-Njigba did lead all 22 in fantasy points this year, 83.1 fantasy points. Puka Nacua had 81.7. But Puka Nacua missed a game, and receivers typically get somewhere between 3 and 5 points a game. So if he had played that game, there's a chance that he's significantly higher than Puka at the end of the season, okay? Jaxon Smith-Njigba, an insane 93.0 receiving grade. Puka, 95.9. Just to give you some context about 95.9 receiving grade, not only is it the first this year, it's the highest PFF graded receiver this year. I had to go back year by year. It is the highest graded receiving grade that has ever been recorded in the PFF era. I looked at Cooper Kupp's big year, Michael Thomas's big year, Calvin Johnson being in the NFL, Antonio Brown. This is the best receiving grade PFF has ever given to a receiver, and it's happening right now, okay? Going back to Njigba, though, super consistent. 1,709 receiving yards on the year and 10 touchdowns is better than Puka Nacua's 1,639 receiving yards and 9 touchdowns. He also had a rushing touchdown, though, so the touchdown total is actually the same. Njigba 505 yards after contact, Nacua 649. Four drops for Nacua, though, which is actually kind of high for somebody like him. 129.4 passer rating when targeted for Puka versus 121.5 for Jackson Smith and Njigba. I think another thing, again, when you take a step back from the numbers and you look at what they had to deal with this year, we could go back to Sean McVay's offense and the Rams offense with Davante Adams across from him, Matthew Stafford at quarterback, it just being very easy compared to Jackson Smith and Njigba with, you know, a new quarterback, first year they're together, named the second receiver out in Seattle, Cooper Kupp, right? He's played half the year. He's half of what he's been. So I don't know. I think it's a close conversation, but the receiving grade for Nacua really blew my mind and made this a really tough decision. So I'm going to make you make that decision.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Puka for that alone. And it's just crazy how close he was to one of the most ridiculous catches we've ever seen just a few days ago as well, right there on the sideline late in the game. I really wish he came down with that. But I think it's Puka because, yes, that offense makes things easy at times, but he also makes it look easy, way easier than it actually is most of the time. So this is probably the closest race we're going to have among any of the positions this entire series, but I got to give it to Puka. I mean, he's done something, like you said, historic. So give it to Puka. If he had the extra game, he would have scored more for you on the platform, but playing 16 out of 17 games is perfectly fine. So you give it to Puka.
I'm surprised you made the decision that quickly, but I agree with you. I think Puka's the right choice. The cornerback conversation, that's going to be another one. I'm excited to get there, but I am also excited to hear who you have at tight end.
Okay, so tight end is the most flavor of ice cream discussion we may ever have on any show ever. So to start it off, no surprise, it's Trey McBride, 36.6 points overall on the platform, which is second most among tight ends. 86.1 receiving grade, third among tight ends. 82.4 overall is just second among the entire position on offense. He ran a route on 92.7% of passing snaps, which is the highest rate among any tight end in the league, tied with Evan Engram. So again, that passing game ran pretty much through him. 1,174 receiving yards, first among tight ends. 11 touchdowns, tied for first among tight ends. 119 receptions on 156 targets, also first among tight ends. 0.8 drop percentage, lowest in the league among tight ends, maybe among receivers also. I should have probably checked that. So everything you could have through the air runs through Trey McBride, and he's incredibly damn good at it. The next nominee is the answer to a question a lot of people have asked themselves this season, which is, what the heck has happened with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely? Both of them have managed to just disappoint everybody, it would seem. Charlie Kolar, the tight end for the Ravens, fourth round pick in 2022 out of Iowa State. Shout out Matt Campbell, doing big things. 35.4 points on the platform, which is just under Trey McBride, just behind Trey McBride on the platform. His grading itself isn't quite as high, 78.1 overall on offense, which is eighth among tight ends. 72 run blocking grade, which is eighth among qualifying tight ends. 75.4 receiving grade, which is 19th among tight ends. So he's solid all around. His average depth of target of 9.5 yards is actually seventh among tight ends with at least 10 targets in the league. So he doesn't have a lot of targets at all, like maybe a little over a dozen on the season, but he only caught 10 passes the entire year. But when you needed him the most, from weeks 15 to 17, his weekly grades, 86, 85.6, 76.2. That's playoff winning stuff. So this is someone who's not getting a lot of targets through the air at all, but he's a top 10 run blocker at the position on an offense that really relies and needs that sort of production on the ground game to function and produces when his name is called upon. So these guys couldn't be more different at all. One is way flashier than the other. The other just kind of puts his hand in the dirt, you know, does all the dirty work, and on occasion we'll get a nice target, but we'll make something happen with it. So which flavor of ice cream are you picking, Chris?
So, funny enough, dude, I just went and checked some of our leagues. You know who I want to pick. I just went and checked in some of our leagues, and Charlie Kohler is a free agent in several of the leagues I'm in, which just goes to show you that people are so conditioned by traditional fantasy football that yards and touchdowns are all that they hear. But that is one of my favorite things about All 22, that the platform really does account for what these positions do that don't touch the ball as much, right? And I think tight end is a similar position to, say, safety, where there's so many different flavors of safety, guys that do different things. Corner too, right? There's guys that do very different things. Tight end is a position like that, where there are guys like Charlie Kohler that add tons and tons of value to their team as blockers. It's interesting too that they just signed Mark Andrews to a long-term deal when Isaiah Likely is going to be a free agent this year, and you have a guy like Charlie Kohler. So to me, you kind of think Charlie Kohler and Isaiah Likely kind of complement each other a little bit better than Charlie Kohler and Mark Andrews, or Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely. So pretty, it's going to be interesting to see what they do at tight end for the long term. Saying that, as much as the league is starting to go back towards being a running first league, it's still a pass heavy league. Like today, it is still more pass heavy than it is run heavy. So I think we give it to Trey McBride. And I mean, the season he's having is just fantastic. It's so exciting. My dog's barking. I apologize for that. But it's going to be cool. It's going to be cool to see how this conversation continues to change over time. But I'm giving it to McBride.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. But yeah, shout out Charlie Kohler. Way to put in the dirty work. We're proud of you.
Yeah, for sure. Tackle gets super interesting as well, because this was a year where we had several guys having outstanding years. We had Tristan Wirfs, Garrett Bowles, Andrew Thomas when he was healthy, all playing at extremely high level. But I am nominating for the 2025 Offensive Tackle of the Year two guys that I think it's a little sentimental to me, right? Because we have Trent Williams on one hand, who is the past, and then we have Penny Sewell, who is the future. And the fact that those two guys are still in the conversation year after year, even though Sewell's super young and Williams has been doing it for an eternity, it's a great conversation. So Penny Sewell, 63 fantasy points. Trent Williams, 56.9. He's missed a little bit of time. Penny Sewell has a 95 offensive grade this year, 96.8 run blocking grade, number one in the system at tackle, 79.4 pass blocking grade though, right? We go to Trent Williams. It's honestly kind of a similar conversation. 91.5 offensive grade, 91.0 run blocking grade, 79.9 pass blocking grade. So the numbers are really close in reality, right? You look at Penny Sewell, 2 sacks allowed, 6 quarterback hits, 11 hurries, 19 pressures, versus Trent Williams, who had 4 sacks allowed, 8 hits, 20 hurries, 32 pressures. Penny Sewell's efficiency rating was an 98.2. Trent Williams' efficiency rating was a 96.8. Another couple things to look at, right? Penny Sewell, insane offensive line, really good coaching staff, great all-around offense with tons of weapons. Trent Williams, quarterback, was hurt half the year. The rest of the offensive line is almost terrible, right? I think the centers played pretty well, but besides that, it's been a rough group. And Pooney, I knew you were going to say it. I caught it. So a couple guys on that line are good, but it's nowhere near the group of players that the Lions have. So not sure if that goes into your equation, but again, pretty sentimental to me to nominate these two guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry to crush you, but it's going to be Penny Sewell, because he's doing all this, but you do got to remember the Lions did lose Ben Johnson. They have an adjustment of their own there. And also, it's just, I can't get that iconic image. Really, it's images, because it happened multiple times. But nearly every time Jahmyr Gibbs broke one of his huge runs this year, it was behind Penny Sewell. And Penny Sewell was just paving the way, blocking multiple people on a given play. All respect to Trent Williams, but you got to remember that offense too does help him out. Maybe not him, because he doesn't need the help, but it does help out everyone a little bit, given what Shanahan is able to do at times. So he's still, so they're both in pretty good advantageous situations with that in mind. I think Sewell just been a bit more efficient and then has those just sort of moments, which I hate that, because it's like, oh, Heisman moments, like that's dumb. But like, he has those moments where he hit those highs and they resulted in those big game-changing runs and game-changing plays that I got to give him the edge in that regard, with all respect to Trent Williams.
It's a great pick. 95.0 PFF grade on the year is fantastic. And it's funny because I was like thinking about it when I was going through it. I was like, oh, I just looked at Puka Nacua, who has the best grade for forever. 95 is really high, but all I literally needed to do was click on Trent Williams and see that he did that like 5 years ago and higher. So like, again, like it's cool because these are the two guys, I think, kind of handing it off, like this award from Trent Williams of the past to Penny Sewell of the future. Great pick in Sewell. Who do you got at guard?
I'm glad to see you get all sentimental about the offensive line.
That's why we do this, man.
So first nominee at guard is Quinn Meinerz at right guard for the Denver Broncos. So 47.3 points in all 22, which is first among all guards, the highest graded guard at 91.1 overall. 92.7 run blocking grade, which is first among all guards in the league. He has a nice 69 pass block grade, so 19th among guards in the NFL. So not bad, still very good, but obviously not elite like he is in the ground game. On zone runs, 132 zone runs, he's graded out at 89.3 run blocking wise and 92.2 run blocking on 195 gap runs. So he's the third best zone blocking guard in the league and the overall best gap blocking scheme guard in the NFL. So however you want to run the football, he can do it for you. You can get behind Quinn Meinerz. You can count on him. Zero penalties called on run plays overall. His overall pass blocking efficiency, 97.9, which is 12th among all guards. So still really solid, even when he hangs his hat on what he does on the ground game. He still gets it done pass blocking as well. The second nominee, as you know, is near and dear to my heart. Michael Onwenu finally has played all snaps at right guard this year after splitting time last year and then going back and forth like year in and year out since he's entered the league between guard and tackle. He now finally has played all of his snaps at guard this year. 43.3 points on the platform, which is fifth among all guards. 74.2 run blocking grade, which is 10th, and a 78 pass blocking grade, which is 4th. After week 10, his 85.8 overall grade is 4th among all guards. Run blocking grade is 4th among all guards, and his pass blocking grade is 6th among all guards. Zero sacks given up in that time frame, and not a single weekly grade below 74.7 from week 10 onward. And remember, this is his first year back at full-time guard after rotating back and forth between guard and tackle for years, which can really mess with you and your comfort. So while the high-end metrics might not be quite as high as Quinn Meinerz are, he really came on strong the second half of the year as he got more comfortable in one spot finally. So what could you expect to come in the future? Probably more of the same. Which you take?
This is a really tough one. And I love Michael Onwenu, and it's, if you look at his grades, right, you'd mention that the last few years he's bounced around. But this is his first really like high graded season since 2021. So like this has been quite a run of like, you know, super high start and then hit a kind of a tough patch, kind of moving him around a little bit. And you're right, he settles and he's already one of the best guards in the NFL again. Another thing, I was like hoping you'd recommend somebody maybe not on a good team so that I could be like, oh, like, you know, he didn't impact the team as much, but both of these guys are on teams that are playing as good as anybody in football. This one's really hard, but I think it's Quinn Meinerz. Just been really awesome. I think him and Bowles, that tandem on the offensive line, has been just so fun to watch, and the way they move people in the run game is so special. I'm loving seeing what RJ Harvey's able to do now since Dobbins been out and him stepping up and playing well behind these guys. It's a fun offense to watch. I watched them do it to the Packers. It was brutal. And because of that, I kind of got to give him his respect and just give him the award.
Yeah, I think you can give it to him because Michael Onwenu will be back here next year. So
He will, man. He will. If he stays at guard, he will. All right, we're going to go to center. This is... It was hard for me to make a really good argument here. I'm not going to lie to you. I think one of the names I'm going to nominate is essentially on a trend to be a Hall of Famer. The other one is a guy that stepped up and played really, really well, and I think he deserves his flowers too. But the guys I'm nominating for the 2025 Center of the Year Award is Creed Humphrey and Aaron Brewer. Aaron Brewer on the Dolphins, for you, those of you out there that don't even know that, right? But Creed this year, 31.8 fantasy points against Brewer's 29.4. The snap counts are pretty close. Creed's played a few more snaps. 89.6 offensive grade for Creed Humphrey, which is first among centers. 90 run blocking grade, which is second among centers. 83.3 pass blocking grade, which is first among centers. So that balance there for Creed Humphrey, this is like the fifth year in a row since he's entered the NFL where we're having this conversation about him being the best center in the NFL. And the fact that it's balanced like that, second best run blocking, first best pass blocking, it's pretty special. Okay. So Brewer, again, giving him his props. 85.9 offensive grade is second, 91.2 run blocking grade is first, but a 69.5 pass blocking grade, still good, but seventh. Okay. They both let up one sack. Creed has let up two QB hits. Brewer's only let up one. 10 hurries for Brewer, 12 pressures for Brewer. Creed, 8 pressures, 5 hurries. Again, fifth year in the NFL for Creed, and 4 of those years have been 89 or higher. Okay. And all 5 of them have been over 80. So we're just talking about, again, generational center that we really need to appreciate while he's here. Brewer, on the other hand, this is his first year with an over 80 graded season, but it's only his second year in Miami. And I think him and that offense is making a difference because they desperately needed offensive line help. So really excited for Brewer. Who's your pick?
Yeah, we don't do voter fatigue here. All right. If you're most deserving, you're most deserving. So it's going to be Creed Humphrey, but I loaded up on a lot of shares of Aaron Brewer in all 22 once he started to really kind of take off. And I'm extremely excited about it, but it's Creed Humphrey. He's in a tier of his own. And deserves it. We're not going to, you know, there's no charity awards here. So respect to Aaron Brewer. You're really good. And I'm putting my money where my mouth is by having you in a lot of leagues, but it's Creed Humphrey.
All right. Yeah. Easy pick. But dude, 30 minute mark, we're doing a pretty good job halfway through. Let's jump to the defensive side of the ball and lead us off with defensive interior.
Okay. I'm not even sure this one is an argument, and I'm not even sure I don't even think I could be partial by doing this.
Come on, man.
I'm not even going to tell you which candidate I'm going to start with, but I'm sure you'll figure it out pretty quickly where this one is going. Kobe Turner, okay, defensive interior for the Rams. 55.6 all 22 points, which is good for third among all defensive interiors on the platform. 81 overall grade, which is sixth among defensive interiors. 70.2 run defense grade is 14th among defensive interiors, and his 82.2 pass rush grade is good for eighth. So pretty darn good balance there with some high-end flickers there. From weeks 11 to 17, so the back half of the year when, you know, it gets crunch time and you really need him the most, the second highest graded defensive interior player behind Quinnen Williams at 89.6, and the fourth highest run graded defensive tackle at 80.1, and the sixth highest pass rush graded defensive tackle at 79.3. And he has the most sacks among all defensive interior players with 6. So he really turned it on in the back half of the year when you needed him the most. He was playing at a household name level, even if he's not a household name for most people. Second nominee is Cam Hayward. 59.3 points on the platform, the most among any defensive interior player. 83 overall run defense grade, which is second. 84.7 pass rush grade, which is fifth among all defensive interior players. He's played 785 defensive snaps through week 17, which is the most of any defensive interior player in the league. He is 36 years old. His 40 hurries are second among all defensive interior players in that span, behind only Jeffrey Simmons. And I repeat, he is 36 years old. Not only, he's not just 36 years old. He's apparently 36.8 years old. I didn't look up his birthday, but apparently it's coming pretty damn soon. He's 36 years old, and he's top 5 run defender and in pass rush, has the second most hurries in the league. He's 36, Chris, and he was the highest scoring defensive interior player on the platform at 36. It's Cam Hayward, isn't it?
Dude, I love Kobe Turner, and I'm so excited you nominated him. And it, again, it's a young player that's starting to kind of develop as one of those guys, which is dope. 36 years old, Cam Hayward doing it like this? Are you kidding me? And besides that, right? Like, we always talked about how Chris Jones was in the shadow of Aaron Donald. What about Cam Hayward, right? But, oh, by the way, Aaron Donald retires and Cam Hayward does it for 6 more years at the best level in the NFL. Super cool. Love that he's doing it the way that he's doing it. And again, it's like, That's why Pittsburgh is good. They are able to retain players like this, and they create superstars that stay with them for long amounts of time. Cam Hayward is easily the pick here. Love to see that he's still doing it. And we do not get voter fatigue. Will he be here at 37.8?
He doesn't get fatigued either. Like, he apparently doesn't get fatigued. He
doesn't get fatigued. All right, dude. I'm going to do Edge. I recognize I'm maybe fighting the most uphill battle in this entire conversation doing edge rusher because somebody's name has been on a lot of TV stations lately, but I'm going to do my best. So nominating the 2025 All-22 Edge Rusher of the Year, I have two names, Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons may be a surprise to some people as to be on here because I think sack total-wise, which is what most people pay attention to, there's a few guys above him, right? Brian Burns is another name of a guy that's having a fantastic year. But I think Parsons gives me the best argument to fight Myles Garrett in this conversation. So that's what I'm going to do here. Micah Parsons has an 81.8 fantasy points this year, but a 92.5 defensive grade, first in the NFL. 92.9 pass rushing grade, tied for first in the NFL. 82.7 run defensive grade, which is phenomenal. 75 total pressures, 24 sacks. Again, PFF doesn't do half sacks, so all of the sack numbers are rounded. We're counting them for 24 sacks. 13 hits, 38 hurries, 45 stops. You look at Micah Parsons now, 69.7 fantasy points. Again, he's been hurt since week 16, so he didn't get grades last week, right? So his numbers are going to be a little bit less. 69.7 fantasy points, 92.0 defensive grade, which is third amongst edge rushers, 92.9 pass rushing grade. He's the guy that's tied with Parsons. 70.2 run defensive grade is much lower. But okay, this is where it gets interesting, okay? Myles Garrett had 75 total pressures. Micah Parsons in one less week, 79 total pressures, okay? 24 sacks, 14 sacks. Again, they don't do half sacks. 14 QB hits for Parsons is above Myles Garrett's 13. 38 hurries for Myles Garrett versus 51 hurries for Micah Parsons, okay? 28 stops for Parsons. Myles Garrett has 45 stops, okay? I don't know. I think it's at least closer than maybe the media is giving it credit for. I watch Micah Parsons on the Packers every single week before the injury, and I will tell you he's as impactful of a player as I've seen play in the NFL on the defensive side of the ball, besides maybe the guy I'm talking about competing with him and Aaron Donald. But let me hear your thoughts.
Yeah, they are in a tier of their own, just period. And people, I think even while Micah Parsons was healthy, were not giving him the credit he deserved because I think people were really following Myles Garrett and the potential sack record race for pretty much the majority of the season. So people just kind of went, yeah, Micah Parsons, whatever. Like, it's Myles Garrett and then everybody else. And it's like, maybe, but not really, because Micah Parsons is the most impactful pressure player in the entire league. And that is not even close. Like, he can generate pressure way better than anybody else in the league, period. However, finishing also matters. And Myles Garrett has proven to be a next level finisher this year. And he's obviously still incredible at everything else. Also, they both are. So Myles Garrett finished his plays, basically. And Micah Parsons was still incredibly impactful, was still elite, probably in a tier of his own with Myles Garrett outside of everyone else, and wasn't quite recognized for it. And now we're going to have to see how he comes back from injury. But the difference is Myles Garrett finished, and that's why he gets this award. The difference isn't that it's Myles Garrett here, Micah Parsons here, and then everybody else. It's really not. They're still like this. They're still like this. But Myles Garrett finished. People paid more attention to his accomplishments this year because, again, he was making history or chasing history. So I get it. It's way closer than anybody's going to give it credit for, but it is Myles Garrett.
No argument.
In one league, them both, and it's amazing, by the way.
That's cheating. That's cheating.
Yeah,
that's
it really fair. Is. Yeah, it really is.
All right. Go to linebacker. Let me hear. It better be my guy.
I love linebackers. All right. I love linebackers. You guys know that. I'm the linebacker sort of rotation guy. We talked about this guy last week. It's Devin Bush. Okay. Devin Bush. 37.6.
Wait, real quick. He has a 98-yard pick six right now.
I did not see that. I'm paying attention to this podcast, but I'm glad that that's very timely. We're probably not going to get this out till Monday, so people can be like, what the hell are they talking about? We are recording during the 1 p.m. Sunday game slot due to
you're
some
welcome,
scheduling
people,
concerns that we have.
Sacrifice. It's called the sacrifice.
Yeah. But again, these are the All 22 awards, and the All 22 fantasy season just wrapped up last week. So week 18 does not impact this, but I'm glad Devin Bush is making me look good right now. So I'm going to ride that wave. Devin Bush was the second highest scoring linebacker in All 22 with 37.6 points on the season, 86.4 overall defensive grade, which is good for fourth among all linebackers, 84.9 run defense, good for 11th, and 78.7 coverage grade, which is good for fourth. And I know we say that coverage grading is pretty variable, and it is, but that is Devin Bush's sort of archetype, is the athletic, smaller kind of coverage type of player who just really developed into not a stout run defender, but an impactful run defender in the league as well. 68.6 passer rating allowed in coverage is third lowest among all NFL linebackers. He played over 800 snaps through week 17 after playing less than 500 total this year. So he took on a bigger role, stayed healthy, and is obviously making an impact, not just through week 17, but also apparently in week 18 as well. And the thing is, he's still just 27 years old, and you probably got him a lot cheaper in All 22 and invested a lot less in him in All 22 than the next nominee, who is Jack Campbell. So this is a rigged race, but we're going to talk about Jack Campbell. 38.6 points in All 22 this season, which is good for first among all linebackers. 92.6 run defense grade is good for second among all linebackers. His 74.3 pass rush grade is good for seventh among all linebackers, and 72.9 in coverage, good for ninth. So he is top 10 throughout every major category among linebackers. He has 64 stops, which is good for first among all linebackers, 3 forced fumbles, which is second most in the league among linebackers, and his 7.5 missed tackle rate is the 12th lowest in the league. So it's only 12th lowest, Chris. He's pretty terrible. I don't see how he could win this award, but why don't you go ahead and make the pick for linebacker of the year in All 22?
Yeah, no, I'm excited about the two names you threw out there. And again, it's exciting because they're two new names, right? These are not names that have been, you know, it was great. Zach Bond. I think Zach Bond is having an awesome year too. Surprised you didn't maybe include him.
He's close.
Edgerrin Cooper, who I know is your boy, Bobby Wagner, right? Like, there are a bunch of guys in here that are having great years that had been in this conversation before. But something I always kind of look at, and I've said it a bunch when I've been kind of putting my nominations out there, is like, what is the surrounding cast like? How easy is their job compared to the other guy? I think playing on a defense that has Myles Garrett, Alex Wright, Mason Graham, Shelby Harris, Carson Schwessinger in the year he's having, Malik Collins in the year that he was having before the injury, like, that's as good of a situation in front of you. And again, linebacker, a lot of times it's important what's in front of you. You mentioned Devin Bush is great in coverage. He's been great in coverage, but he's able to do that so much easier because what's in front of him is potentially the best in the NFL this year, right? When you look at the Lions, it is also a really good situation, but I don't think you can compare the two and say that the Lions are anywhere close to that, right? Obviously, Aiden Hutchinson is awesome. But DJ Reader's having kind of a down year. Williams, the rookie, is doing okay, but he's not breaking out yet. And besides those two guys, it's not much, right? Muhammad, the edge rusher, has played pretty well, but there's not much there that says to you it's an easy situation, right? I think Jack Campbell is proving that he is able to be that kind of old school linebacker that does everything at a high level, but consistently and against anybody, right? And that's what's missing from the NFL today, which I love that Jack Campbell kind of brings to the table. Again, like, linebackers that are 250 pounds are not supposed to be able to move the way that Jack Campbell does and be in coverage the way that he is. But we're talking about a 250-pound linebacker that plays coverage snaps almost as good as anybody, right? This is a guy that's also still 25 years old, just getting his legs under him in the NFL. I watched him a lot as a rookie, and even though he's 250 pounds, he looked like kind of like a lost puppy at times. That's just linebacker. So again, excited that he's here. I'm obviously going to choose him, But Devin Bush, another name that I'm really liking and really excited about his futures as well.
Yeah. Lions really miss Aleem McNeil. You know, he's back, but not back to form just yet. And enough about Jack Campbell, Chris. Go ahead. Tell us what's next.
All right. We got cornerback. And this is the one that I said is going to be a really tough situation. And I cheated. I actually am going to nominate three because I feel like I have to. Sue me. Sue me if you feel like you need to. But Devin Witherspoon is where I'm going to lead the conversation. So again, sorry, let me go back. The All-22 NFL nomination for cornerback player of the year. Devin Witherspoon is going to be my nomination number one, okay? 36.3 fantasy points, 678 snaps because he missed six games, which is why I think the conversation is hard. 90 defensive grade is first in the NFL. 86.3 run defensive grade is second in the NFL. 85.2 coverage grade is first in the NFL. Targeted 55 times, allowed 42 receptions, 374 yards allowed, two touchdowns. He has one interception, four pass breakups, and his NFL passer rating against is 98.6, okay? I think if he played the whole season at that rate, we're probably talking about an easy pick here, but he missed six games. Now let's go to the other two guys really quick. Cooper DeJean, 48.9 fantasy points, over 1,000 snaps, 77.3 defensive grade is fourth amongst corners, 71.7 run defensive grade is 20th, 79.0 coverage grade is third. He's been targeted 80 times. He's allowed 51 receptions and 570 yards. He's only allowed one touchdown. He has two interceptions and he has 12 pass breakups. His NFL rating against is 78.6. Okay. Because Witherspoon missed a lot of time, that's why I felt like I needed to include a third. And I think you want me to include Derek Stingley Jr. in this conversation. 43.4 fantasy points this year, 888 snaps, 69.9 defensive grade, which is 18th amongst corners. Not fantastic. His run, and it's really because his run defensive grade is 34.5. I didn't even look up where that ranks. That's just not his game, okay? But a 76.9 coverage grade is fifth. He's been targeted 62 times. He's allowed 33 receptions, 491 yards against. He's allowed two touchdowns. He has four interceptions, which leads this group, nine pass breakups, and an NFL passer rating against of 63.3, which is the best of the three. I wouldn't want to make this decision, so I'm going to make you do it.
This is really tough because there's someone I want to pick who's the person that you said I wanted to have in this conversation. But a lot of the things that I could say about him, I could also say about Cooper DeJean. I do think the missing over a third of the season is really tough for Devin Witherspoon to overcome. The thing about Witherspoon or about DeJean and Stingley is their defensive personnel around them is so good. It does make their lives easier. Derek Stingley can be a horrendous tackler because he's on the Houston Texans defense. So, yeah, you would like for him to be better, but really, you don't have to worry about that too much. You want him to go out there and take the ball away from the opponent because he's going to have chances as a result of the personnel on the front seven there with Hunter and Anderson and what they do to opposing quarterbacks. You want someone who can go in there and make plays, take advantage of it. That's exactly what Derek Stingley does. So he plays his role to a T. As a result, allows the lowest passer rating of the three. But Cooper DeJean, pretty much the exact same story. You want him to take advantage of the opportunities that his defense gives him but because of what's in front of him, and that's what he does. And he's an incredibly effective coverage player while also a more effective tackler. I think when you look at Cooper DeJean, the reason the Eagles have still won so many games despite their offense being in mud for the majority of the year is because of players like Cooper DeJean. I have to give it to DeJean over Stingley, but it's very close. I just think the kind of record with that offense is what it is because of guys like him. Because even so, while you look at both defensive personnel, you know, between the Texans and the Eagles, and you say they're fantastic, that front of the Eagles has taken a little bit of a step back. Okay, they lost some guys on the edge. Jalen Carter wasn't quite the same most of this year because of the shoulder injuries and such. So they're not as dominant up front as they were the year before, yet they were still able to carry that team to many wins this season because the back end was better than it has been in the past, and Cooper DeJean's a big part of that. So I got to give it to Cooper DeJean. They're all effective in all 22 when they're on the field. They're all great to have, but I got to give it to DeJean in a very close one.
Ooh, wow. I'm shocked by that one. I think all three in it could have an argument that they should be the guy, but 200 more snaps than any of the other two guys. That's big. The 12 pass breakups is pretty huge as well. Like, I don't think he's getting the respect by NFL teams and NFL quarterbacks like Stingley is, which means that he's getting targeted more, but he's not giving up anything, right? So like really, really excited there for him. And I know we have one more position left. Why don't you tell us who you have at safety?
This is really tough, man. This one's ending on like a bit of a whimper, but we're going to do it anyway. Safety, we're going to start with the highest graded score or the highest scoring player in all 22 at safety, Xavier McKinney, 38.9 all 22 points. Good among all true safeties on the platform. 78.9 coverage grade is good for seventh. 82.7 run defense grade is good for fifth. He has seven pass breakups, which is good for second in the NFL. So we recall very recently he was leading the league in interceptions. He's not doing that again, but he is still around the football and getting his hand on the ball with seven PBUs, which again is second among all safeties in the NFL. So he's still around the ball, even if it's not showing on the interception total. His 63.8 passer rating when targeted is sixth lowest among all safeties. And it's not like he has the Texans cornerback duo in front of him. Sorry to say for Chris and all you Packers fans out there, but it's a little bit tougher on the back end for someone like McKinney.
Come on, Diggs.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Good luck with that one, buddy. The next name is not a surprise. This one's kind of chalk. Kyle Hamilton. 37.8 all 22 points is good for second most among safeties on the platform. He is the highest graded overall safety at 88 on the season. 87.2 coverage grade is also first among safeties. 91.4 pass rush grade is also first at his position. 77.6 run defensive grade is 20th among all safeties. So still incredibly solid in the run game as well. He missed a game early on in the season, or he would be the highest scoring safety on the platform. He has two forced fumbles, a 6.5% missed tackle rate, which is good for 11th lowest among all safeties, and has 10 pressures, which is the ninth highest when it comes to the pass rush there. So he can do it all, which is not a surprise. It's Kyle Hamilton. That's what we've come to expect of him. Missed a game, so he's not the highest scorer, but is still kind of just doing it yet again. So, Chris, it's kind of chalk, but who's your pick here?
All right. So, like, I'm going to address Xavier McKinney first. I think he's been awesome. But I will say that Jeff Havely has made his job really easy. The way he's been using Evan Williams and Javon Bullard creates this role for Xavier McKinney that literally just maximizes the way that he plays football. So it's perfect for him. And again, he's been great. But when you go look at Kyle Hamilton, we could go back to the Creed Humphrey conversation and say, this is a guy that since he's been in the NFL is on a Hall of Fame trajectory. 82.3 as a rookie, 86 in his sophomore year, 90.1 last year, and now 88 again. Like, we're talking about a guy that's, it just doesn't have flaws, right? Like, plays the game flawlessly. And I think the way I'm going to make my decision is really just about when I watch film, right? Because at the end of the day, you have to trust your eyes. When you watch Kyle Hamilton play football, you see the most valuable defensive piece on the Ravens defense. When you watch Xavier McKinney play football, I'm not sure you get that same feeling, although he is great. So I'm going to give it to Kyle Hamilton, which kind of wraps this up. And just really quick, if you don't mind, I'm going to just run through all of our winners just to call them out. Okay.
I'm glad you did that. So yeah, go ahead.
I wrote it down. Thanks, Ray. All right. So the all 22 NFL team of the year at quarterback, we have Matthew Stafford. At running back, we have Bijan Robinson. At tight end, Trey McBride. At receiver, we have Puka Nacua. At tackle, Penny Sewell. Guard, we have Quinn Meernes. Center is Creed Humphrey. On the defensive side of the ball, we have Cam Hayward, Miles Garrett, Jack Campbell, Cooper DeJean, and Kyle Hamilton. Ray, if anybody out there has like half of these players on their team, they probably won every game by 50 points.
Sure. I would say so. Especially if it's if it's Matthew Stafford. So that is a heck of a team. I like how there's some old guard names there, right? Matthew Stafford was drafted, what, not even the previous decade. Was he 2000? I don't remember. Maybe he's that old. But yeah, we got some old names in there, but we got some new faces as well who are going to be sticking around for quite a while. So it's a really fun time for the league. And these are some, you know, fun players to watch. And I'm glad all 22 can give these guys sort of their props for not just the high level plays, but the dirty work as well. So heck of a year for all these guys. You're in good shape, like Chris said, if you got a lot of these names. But I think we did a good job. I think we did a good
job. 2009 was Matthew Stafford's rookie year. Yeah. So yeah, pretty crazy. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Give us a like, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and X at @all22_PFF. And give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcasts. And have a great rest of your day. I'm a ghost.